All right, welcome back. It's another episode of Inside Boxing. We are presented by PPV.com, Uncrowned Yahoo Sports Network. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri coming to you Sunday morning, July 26th, after a smorgasbord of boxing from Thailand, Australia, where else? Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Is that it? Was there any other fights that we missed? Any other continents that we missed? Chris Algieri, how are you?
I'm good. Fury was Thailand. Joshua was Saudi. Zhu and Spence was Australia. So yeah, we had all over the globe. It is Sunday morning. It is early. It was a late night. So this is like Sunday morning coffee talk with Dan and Chris.
Fell asleep on the couch during the ring walks of Spence and Zhu. That was a late one. I don't understand why they didn't start at like 11. I digress. Tim Zhu gets the win. Anthony Joshua suffers a first round knockdown.
Scare.
Comes back.
My voice hurts from screaming when he got dropped.
That was wild. Tyson Fury won in Thailand. Didn't look great. Couldn't tell which one was who. Who was Wok? Who was Fury in those highlights? Both 6'7", bald, fat dudes. Kind of sparring, kind of fighting. It wasn't a great weekend of fights. I'm going to be 100% honest. But keep it 100% on this show. Keep it 100.
Yeah.
Wasn't the best weekend.
We were excited for this weekend. Did not. Doesn't always pan out. This weekend did not pan out.
It was just a lot of bland boxing. A lot of boxing, but nothing really caught fire. Like, none of these fights caught fire. I guess the Joshua fight was the most exciting, but it was, like, only exciting because Joshua doesn't have any more punch resistance. We'll start there. Anthony Joshua wins second round stoppage over Christian Prenga. He's down twice in the first round. 20 seconds into the fight, Joshua is down and down hard. Down again towards the end of the fight. Could have had three knockdowns in the first round.
End of the round,
yeah. He could have had three knockdowns in that first round. He went crashing into the ropes. That was looked to me like ropes cannot hold you up. Could have been another knockdown. Looked awful in the first round. Second round comes around. Christian Prenga decided not to throw any punches. He threw 32 punches in the first round, threw 17 in the second round. What is going on with Christian Prenga's game plan? I don't want to start using those words everyone uses on social media, but that was fishy. Joshua gets the win. Fury gets the win on Friday. What was your reactions? And what you said you were screaming at the TV. Yeah, I was at a party in Long Island. I was screaming at my phone watching it on DAZN.
I don't know if I said it on this show, but I've been saying it all week. I didn't like that fight. I didn't like Josh. And I did say it on this show. I didn't like it. It made me feel weird because you got a puncher, and AJ's punch resistance suspectedly isn't great, and then it showed up that it's not. He literally got hit with an arm punch on the inside. The guy, he did like a dirty boxing, grabbed his head.
Yeah, that was a little tactic there from Prenga.
Like a ton of bricks. Mind you, Tyson Fury was doing the exact same thing to Wok. A day earlier. Same move. Literally. Boom, boom, boom. And he was doing it with much more force and quicker. And AJ, he was smiling through it. But, dude, you got a guy like Prenga who was throwing big. And I'm like, oh, he's going to get knocked out. Because Prenga kept throwing in that first round. And you're absolutely right. Second round, it was like a different fight. The guy, I don't know if he got his marching orders in the corner. Was like, hey, listen. Hey. Whoa. Oh. Make it look good, but you don't gotta make it too good.
I hate that.
It's Raging Bull when he's fighting that fighter and he accidentally drops him in the first round. He's like holding him up. I'm not saying it's like that. I think Prenga probably just shit the bed because he wasn't used to being at that level. And Anthony Joshua, I don't care if his legs are going two different directions, he can still knock you out with a right hand. But yeah, very, very difficult watching that 90 seconds. I screamed really loud. I said, I goddamn it, I knew it. This is not a good fight.
You said it. Go back and listen to last episode. We gave Prenga his flowers. I said, bro, this guy has 7 first round stoppages in his last 9 fights, and the other 2 fights were second round stoppages. Obviously, the level of opposition wasn't at his highest, but the guy can punch, and he's big, and I have to respect Joshua for, first of all, taking this fight 7 months after everything that happened and making that ring walk, and we'll get to that in a second. His post-fight interview was all over the place, as we do with every Joshua fight, is we dissect his psyche. and we dissect his post-fight interviews because they are wild.
Well, the wildness of the level of wild that comes out of the Anthony Joshua
experience
post-fight interviews depends on how the fight went. If he is a little embarrassed, he gets a little.
Well, every loss, I think he's a little embarrassed. He's been embarrassed, yes. And then this was embarrassing for him. In a way, like I want to give him his credit for taking the fight and continuing his career after everything that happened just 7 months ago. Hearn even said afterwards, Eddie said, I thought it was too soon. Like I think we rushed into this. I thought he was done. I thought he was finished.
Yeah, but when Hearn says that, so who picked the opponent? That's where my concern is. I'm not knocking Anthony. They picked the wrong guy for him. This is not, you don't come back to off of something like that.
You've been here before. Who does pick the opponent? Is it the fighter? Is it the promoter? Is it the manager? Is it the financier, which is Turkey? Like who picks? Is it a collective process?
We live in a weird world now where fights are made by a financier sometimes. Like Turkey just says put two guys together and that's how the fight gets made. Usually though, like with a comeback fight, it's going to be your side. The management, that you know, the team and Eddie are going to come together and they're going to be like, all right, we got a list of guys. This guy's too dangerous. This guy's out. This guy moves too much. He's out. This is the perfect comeback opponent ahead of a giant matchup with Tyson Fury. Not the 20-1, 20 knockout guy who starts fights fast and is 6'5". Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. It's better than what Fury rolled out there.
I mean, is it? Fury literally wanted a sparring session. He wanted a training camp so he doesn't get fat. He wanted a fat camp and then he wanted a sparring session. And that's why it wasn't on TV. That's why there was no line. It's all
it was.
It
kind of made more sense.
He didn't get, nobody made any money. It wasn't like a big money making thing, you know. So I don't know. I wasn't mad at that because I think he, for him, as a rhythm fighter and a guy who's kind of the way he fights is very much based on his reactions and his rhythm. He needs to be active. AJ's a puncher, and he needs to protect his chin because that chin, dude, that health meter on your chin goes down and it goes down and it goes down. Why are you testing it before a big fight?
Man, these tune-ups. We got to stop with these tune-ups, guys. Like, when are we going to learn? Especially the heavyweight division. Like, anything could happen. Christian Pringle is a hard puncher. Cuts, injuries. Yeah. Like, and yet once again, we're rolling out all of these tune-up fights. And I get it because of Fury. Joshua's timeline got all skewed. But, I mean, would anyone care if he went right into a Fury fight?
I wanted him to, but listen, I get it. Coming off of, you know, that horrific injury where you're losing, you know, vital team members and family-like friends, I understand, because you don't want to have that existential crisis when you're in there, when you got Tyson Fury in front of you. But also, I don't think you want to do it in front of Pringa, who again, a dangerous guy. I think they could have just picked a guy that you could go through the gears, as the Brits like to say. And that wasn't it. He had to, like, fight tooth and nail for, you know, 6 minutes and get shocked and shock the world a little bit. I mean, listen, AJ's fun. He's so fun
still
to watch.
Is, yeah.
He's still fun to watch. He's vulnerable enough, but he's so goddamn dangerous too. It was entertaining. It was the most entertaining fight of the weekend by far.
Yeah, for most entertaining, what was it, like 3.5 minutes?
Yeah. Did you notice him reaching down for his calf?
I didn't see that.
He reached down for his left calf more than once during the fight. And there was some, I think someone mentioned it, that they might, you know, they were wondering if there was an injury. It was weird. It was definitely his lead side, so his left side. So I don't know if he pulled something when he went down. I don't know what it was. His legs were a little off even when he got the finish. If you notice, his legs are extra, they were extra wide when he was throwing the punches at the end. But so if you would have heard if there was anything.
Yeah, I mean, what I did notice was the punch resistance is absolutely gone. It's usually the last thing to go on an aging fighter. But what you do keep is your power. And that second round, did he turn it on?
You said your punch resistance is the first thing to go. You said it was the last thing to go.
God, it's early. Usually the first thing. Early, guys.
It is early, guys.
So let me get that.
Bear with
us. Let me get that right. The first thing to go is your punch resistance. The last thing to go is your power. Second round, Joshua turns it on. Pringa stops throwing punches, plays his part. Joshua comes in there, starts throwing the jab, finding a home for that right hand. Still has that game-changing power. Like, that was a vicious, vicious combination to end the fight. Joshua smiling in the first round was kind of crazy. Especially this guy is absolute crazy, man. But yeah, he's shot. Let's just be honest. I love Anthony Joshua as a person, but he's not even close to what he once was even 3 years ago when he fought Usyk. When he fought Dubois, he looked way more like had his legs and just looked like he was more presentable. And that was 2 years ago, the Dubois fight. So now he's 36 with the wear and tear of a long career. They never had the best of chins. I know it's heavyweight boxing until like no one, like anything can happen, but has been dropped numerous times in fights. Add on the debilitating car accident towards the end of your career. And this is what we're seeing. You're seeing a guy who's 36 years old and been through the ringer of a long career, a lot of training camps and a lot of eyeballs on him and a lot of scrutiny, but he won. And Tyson Fury, quote unquote, won on Friday. Did you catch any of those highlights on the old Twitter machine or you're not on Twitter, on Instagram?
I did. I caught some of the videos. We actually, over on Boxing Scene, we had an interview with him post-fight. Which is pretty cool, and on that show,
on Fury,
the Boxing Scene Today show, yeah, we had Fury like literally like an hour after the fight happened.
You
we had Tom
to
Ivers
Tyson
who was
Fury?
Like, boots. No, I didn't talk to him. Tom Ivers interviewed him, but we had a video that he'd gotten a couple minutes before he came on the show.
That's cool.
But also, he gave us insight of what the fight looked like because again, you couldn't see it. It was just you could just get clips.
I saw enough, though.
But Tom said. Yeah, he said it was a glorified sparring session.
I saw enough. Like I saw, Fury got tagged a bunch of times.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Wok used to come and spar on Long Island. He's like a perennial sparring partner, super tough guy. I mean, he's goddamn 50 years old now, but he's big and he knows how to fight. He's just an old man. But I mean, listen, Tyson looks snappy. He was being long with the jab. He was just going through the gears, and I think for him. Mentally, he needed that. He was very excited afterwards. He was like, oh, I got the rounds. I got the movement in. You know, I got good seven rounds in. I didn't get really, you know, getting hit with too much.
Didn't get dropped.
I was landing at will. No, I didn't get dropped. But so I wanted to touch on that because you were talking about AJ's chin and the wear and tear. Tyson's chin is checked also. He's been down a lot in his career. You spend three fights with Wilder, you're not going to be the same guy. The difference is it's really hard to get to Tyson. Tyson's big, and he's still athletic, and he moves a lot. Where Anthony is so offensive-minded, he's there. I think we're just seeing the results of Anthony's chin more than we are with Tyson. So don't throw it out the window that Tyson Fury has this like stellar or throw it out the window the idea that Tyson Fury has the better chin. I don't know if he does. He just has better defense, doesn't get hit as much.
Doesn't get hit as much, but he didn't. I think Fury's reflexes have taken a big-time turn for the worse. Obviously, like, he had that one moment against Schwartz, remember? Where he ducked, like, eight punches.
Oh, yeah. I called that fight in Vegas. That was like, eight years ago?
I know. Then from that day on, everyone's like, this guy is a modern-day Muhammad Ali. Like, look at him. He's water in there. He can't be touched. He's the shiftiest heavyweight ever. But he's been down, like, seven or eight times in his career. I mean, Fury caught him so many times, and he's Cunningham and all the other guys that have dropped Fury in his career. So he kind of got this, like, reputation.
Wilder, Usyk.
Yeah, he kind of got this reputation of being, like, some, like, defensive wizard, like, so damn good. Yes, he can move for a big guy. I think that's what the thing is you grade him on a curve because he's so damn big. Like, someone that big should be able to move as well as Fury does. But obviously
he's an athlete, no question.
100%. But, like, he is getting older, too, and, like, those reflexes have taken a big-time turn from what I've seen the last couple fights with Usyk, what I saw in the Makhmudov fight, and then one of the clips from the sparring session with Wok. I mean, you can't really take those too seriously, but like he didn't look outstanding. Like he, like you said, went through the rounds, got the rounds, didn't look like AJ. Because it was so funny on Friday afternoon after I watched those highlights of Fury and Wok, I was like, all right, AJ washes him without a doubt. Went to bed Friday night saying,
yeah, how about now? How do you
AJ
feel now?
Saturday mid afternoon on Long Island, I'm like, damn. Fury's going to knock out AJ. It changed like that. And I guess that's why we have to see the fight now because it's a train wreck. Whoever catches who first is going to win. And it's got big time bragging rights. It's washed versus washed to the ultimate degree. But that could be fun in the heavyweight division.
I'm going to say this. The tune-ups did their job for the fighters. they hurt the promotion.
Oh, because big time
hurt. There's going to be way less interest. The level of these guys was still in question. Now it's not. You see where they are. We saw where Fury is at WOC. We saw where AJ is with Pranga. It's like, all right, these guys can only fight each other. Let's pump the brakes
on Joshua wanting to become undisputed. Let's pump the brakes on Fury thinking he could beat Caballero or Talma. I mean, these guys are meant for each other, and then please hug each other afterwards and ride off into the sunset.
They won't. Guarantee it. The winner goes on, and they're going to go fight the next guy. That's just that. But, dude, it's a circle of life in boxing. The old guard has to get eaten by the young lions. Otherwise, how are you going to crown the new king? That's just the way it goes. And I think both of them are warriors, and they're still going to want to fight. They're not going to like just exit out the back door and be like, oh, I got all the titles, bye. Or, you know, I did what I need to do. I'm going out on a win. A lot of times, great fighters don't go out on wins, man. They fight until the bloody end. And I feel like Tyson and AJ both have that in them, and they're going to go for it, which I respect. You know, it sucks to see, because oftentimes fighters are graded on their last performance, which is a shame. But yeah, these guys, they're perfect for each other right now.
Yeah, let's not fast forward, Chris. But let's just get to the actual fight.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They're perfect for each other right
now.
We're
talking about what they can do after
still,
they fight each other.
Listen, the fight's still gonna be fun.
I do agree that the promotion got hurt tremendously, and I'm not laughing, but I'm also like, this is what you guys get. This entire buildup has been painstaking, from the details on where it's gonna air, who's gonna promote it, what time, what stadium, what network, for a fight 8 years too late. That part was painstaking. We've talked about it on the show numerous times. Then they have their tune-up fights, and neither guy looks great, to the point where it's like, some the people that were maybe on the fence won't even be tuning in, but they probably will. I just think the whole thing got hurt, and I think it's just a tale as old as time in the last, like, 25 years of boxing with the business that it is now, with the tune-ups and the, you know, marinating and overexposure of these guys, seeing things you shouldn't see, like, you shouldn't see some of these fights. But it's still going to happen. And, I mean, I thought there would be, like, an announcement today, and, like, it is only 9:15 in the morning. Will we get an announcement? Will we get a date? Will we get a time? Will we get a location? Or is that still going to linger on for the next couple of months too? But, I mean, all signs are pointing to this fight actually going down. And like you said, I totally agree.
Better.
It has to. It's them now. It's them now, and it shouldn't be anyone else.
Yeah. So tune-ups are usually for the promotion. They're usually to get the marketing. They're getting people excited. Like, you put them on back-to-back cards, a Friday card, Saturday card. You put them the same card. You put them in, you know, you put them on cards near each other so they can both be there watching. You know, that's what tune-ups are really for. This tune-up was for the fighters. This tune-up was because AJ didn't feel comfortable going right into another fight, and I completely understand that. But ultimately, it'll help the fighters. It'll help both AJ. It'll help both Fury as well. Not helping the promotion. But we have short memories, and hopefully in a couple months we forgot how this weekend went, and we'll be excited for their matchup.
So what did you make of the post-fight interview? It was all over the place. Josh was happy. He's thanking everyone. He's charismatic. He does a Tyson impression, which I thought was hilarious. He's brought to tears when he thinks about his friends that he lost in the car accident, and then he ends it with calling out Tyson Fury, all in 5 minute span. That's Anthony Joshua experience right there.
It was a little manic. Going through a lot of emotions, and I said this actually while we were watching the interview. I was watching it with my nephew. I go, we really got to do something about interviewing fighters after they've been concussed. Mm. Your emotional control is affected by head injuries. You know, and if you get dropped, and even if you get rung, you got a concussion, a minor one at least, and you're going to have some effect on your thinking and your critical thinking and the way you're going to talk. So a lot of times when you see fighters and they get these wacky post-fight interviews, yeah, it could be because they're probably concussed, almost definitely. You know, so there's that. You know, so and then also the leading questions, like that guy was trying to get AJ to cry.
Yeah,
he starts talking about. Yeah, I mean, was it Ade? When you ask him questions like that, like. I guess you've done those,
and I've done those too. Like, you almost have to ask that.
I know.
But it's like an Oprah moment where it's like Oprah would always interview you, hoping you cry. She did her job that day.
Yeah, do it in the post fight. Do it in the press conference.
Yeah, like 20 minutes, 30 minutes removed.
Yeah, man. Especially after all, like that was a war. It was a 4.5 minute war, but it was a war. And you go through the emotions that you go through during those events, like, dude, your heart rate, the adrenaline, everything. You're now adrenaline dumping, and then you're sitting and talking in front of millions of people.
About friends that
it's
you
a
lost.
Really, yeah, it's a really difficult run of turn of emotions and events
this,
to,
though,
to deal
Chris.
With.
So you're speaking like a fighter, and I get it. You guys are humans, and working with you on the show the last couple of years has really opened up that to me, like that you guys are humans and there's a human element to fighting. Like, you guys have to go through so much in camps, go through so much in your life, and they blend together. That has opened up my eyes big time. But that's the beauty of boxing, is watching those moments afterwards. It's the rawest sport of them all. So we see an absolute war for 5 minutes where Joshua's career was literally hanging in the balance. He loses that fight. Like, we might not get the Fury fight. He might just decide to retire. His whole adult career is life is changing, but he wins. And then we get a ride of emotions afterwards, and we're all just sitting there on our couches watching. Like, I understand it is messed up, but it's also just like, it's an unbelievable thing to watch.
Dan, you're right. And first and foremost, the sport, it's entertainment, right? So you want to see those moments. You want to see the heartfelt, genuine responses from the fighters in these dire times, or these times where we're seeing people push beyond their limits. But I'm speaking as a fighter, like you said. Like, it's tough to do those interviews afterwards, especially, again, I worry about the head trauma and then talking to guys about their emotions and, you know, emotional control. And that's where you get these viral moments, and which people love to see that stuff. But pulling back that curtain isn't always a pretty thing. And fighters are under a microscope anyway, but especially after moments like that. And AJ is one of those guys. He's been under the microscope his entire career. Good, bad, ugly, everything in between. But also, in terms of his ability to deal with it, I think he's just a really genuine guy. So we see a lot of these moments where we kind of go, oof, that probably would have gone differently if he had a little bit more time.
So given everything we've seen over the last couple of years, last couple of weeks, last couple of days, given what we saw from Fury, given what we saw from AJ, who are you giving the edge to in this AJ versus Fury fight now?
Fury. I love AJ. I love his style. I love everything about him. I like Fury too. I really like Fury. But Fury just seems stylistically right now, he gets moving, he gets grooving. You know, he hits you with those stupid weird uppercuts on the inside. He hits you with punches you don't see. And, you know, AJ is susceptible early. But, you know, also Tyson's not a puncher like Pranga. So, like, is it going to have the same effect? I'm going against my call right now already. I'm rooting for AJ, but I don't know. I lean Fury. I just think he's a little more durable and a little harder to hit. And he's just a dog, man. Mentally, he's very, very strong, and I think that's going to be a big part of this.
Yeah, I feel like Fury looked better, and I think his skills have translated better into this stage in his career. Like, yeah, he didn't look fantastic against Walk, but he didn't look like Joshua. But I will say this about Joshua, has way more power than Fury right now. Like, Fury doesn't have any power on those shots. Like, those are...
He's lost power.
He's lost power, and AJ still has his, but AJ's chin has never been worse. So if by that logic, I would
say... It's all relative, right?
But that logic, if Joshua can catch Fury early, and Fury's reflexes aren't so great, we can see an early stoppage for Joshua, but I can also see Fury just kind of styling on AJ and outboxing him for a large portion of that.
Honestly, I think AJ could knock him out at any point. As long as the fight's going on, it doesn't have to be early. He could be getting outboxed thoroughly. He could be down a few times because AJ fights. He'll go down and get up. So, but like, he punches that hard. That's not going anywhere. AJ punches hard, and he's willing to put his chin on the line to knock you out. So that's why we love AJ. He's a warrior.
All right, I'm excited for this fight again.
I think I am too. Forget. I have a very short memory in boxing.
We just have to see it. We have to see it. We have to know how this plays out 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now. We have to say, oh, remember AJ and Fury? Yeah, it happened too late, but it had to happen. This chapter, this saga has to have an ending. And hopefully we get it very, very soon, and we don't have to deal with any more of the shenanigans. Let's see on this card. Josh Kelly survives a scare from Karaman Ajorko. I picked the Jorko, or I said, hey, take a look at the Jorko on the money line and the decision, because he is very tricky in there. 115, 112, twice, 114, 113. Kelly had a 97 to 87 edge in total punches, so it was really close. He was bloodied. Kelly got a really bad cut. Might be a broken nose, might be just a really bad cut. Wasn't a superb fight. I think Jorko was a little passive in there. He maybe could have stepped on the gas pedal and might have been able to get a decision in this one. But Kelly does just enough, as usual. Like, he's not great. He's very solid. I think he should go right to boots, right, and cash in, because that's what Eddie pretty much said afterwards, not so many words.
Yeah, that was always the line. They just wanted to give him a defense. They picked a guy who's kind of similar, really, to not in style, but in terms of where he's at in his career. 18-0, you know, 7 KOs, not a big puncher, doesn't have a ton of experience at the world-class level. Very solid, workman-like type guy. And Josh Kelly should handle guys like that because he is so dynamic. But he had a rough night. And at 54, every night's going to be rough because everybody's tough as hell. And this was not even really, this is not, no, not even, it's not even close. This is not a top 10 guy at 154. Jorko. No knock on him. The weight class is just super deep. So if you're struggling with a guy like that, Eddie sees the writing on the wall. It's like, all right, let's go get a big fight, make some big money, and basically get fed to boots, because that's where this ends.
Yeah, it's boots. It's got to be the boots fight next. Like, don't even mess around. Come right here. Well, the only thing is with the injury, the nose, like the severity of that. If
yeah, that cut was nasty. That thing was wide open.
That thing was huge cut. Like, and so November, that's might not be November.
Yeah, that's a good point. The cut's not as big of a deal as maybe a possible broken nose. Because if that nose is broken, which it probably is.
So was it a cut, or it was bleeding, but the blood was coming from the cut? Like, it wasn't coming from the nose, though.
No. It looked like he has a busted nose that came through the outside. Because that can happen to you. Yeah. Because the last thing, like, if the nose gets shifted enough and that cartilage snaps and pokes through the skin almost like a compound fracture, that can happen. That looks like what that was. We're going to have to wait for reports. But, yeah, it's going to take some time to heal. I mean, it was funny. I saw a video where they were asking him about his nickname. He was like, yeah, it's Pretty Boy. And he was like, yeah, he's like, I'm trying to kind of away from that and just go to White Lightning. But now, I think, Raging Bull reference, ain't pretty no more. You know,
bro, I was thinking the same exact thing. Like, this guy's a good looking dude, like Pretty Boy, Josh Kelly. You know, you step into your face gets dismembered. Like,
yeah,
your face gets fucked up.
Boxing is not good for your looks, man.
Come out of that shit. Like, luckily, you came out pretty unscathed. Like, Josh Kelly, broken nose. Like, he's not going to be doing any modeling anytime soon if he keeps finding himself in these wards.
I was talking to Paulie Malignaggi about that. We were talking about how many stitches we had in our face. And I was like, I had five. He goes, five? He's like, I've lost count. I'm like, yeah, I didn't get cut much. I didn't really get hit a whole lot. You're the copy box guy. You know that. Like, I took some bad losses, but like, even in my bad losses, I didn't get hit all that much. And I never, you know, even my wars, quote unquote wars, I was always defensively sound. So, my eyes, my nose, my teeth all came out.
I made it on the other end. Suffering some of the worst cuts now. Like,
well, he's doing bare knuckle. I mean, he's got no...
He's out of his mind. He was on the call last night for Spence and Zoo, which we'll get to.
Yeah, he did a great job.
He's really good, as always. Man. He's so good at calling fights. So Josh Kelly survives. Cash this guy out. No disrespect. That's a great thing. You were going to make a lot of money. You have a title. You did win. You beat a Jorko. You did win this fight. And so that's nothing to hang your hat on. Like, it took a little bit harder than maybe you thought. And you came out of it with some with maybe a broken nose, but go out there, fight Boots, because I don't see him beating Fundora. I don't see him beating Boots. I think Xander Zayas would have beaten Kelly. You know, Barao would give him. He's just like the weakest link of the champs. And, you know,
not a knock on him. It's a deep weight class. It's a very, very deep weight class.
It's insane. So Josh Kelly moves on. Hamza Shiraz. Good gracious.
Possibly the worst performance of the weekend.
Yeah, I would say Josh maybe worse, but Joshua won and knocked the guy out in the next round. Survives against Simon Zackenhuber, who was a Seraz was minus 3,000 heading into this fight. 114, 114, one judge had it. 115, 113, 116, 112. Seraz looks like a world beater against Berlanga, Bejic, some of these other guys, then looks absolutely pedestrian at other times where he gets lazy. I don't know if he loses focus. He fights down to his opponent. He just, you know, he just seems like a guy that only has power and relies on that way too much and then forgets to do all the other things that you need to do to win a fight.
I don't know what it is. Because he had a similar performance against Carlos Adames at 160 where he just couldn't step on the gas, was stuck in the same gear, was almost listless, you know, and I saw that again. I'm wondering, I'm like, did he outgrow this weight class too? Because he blamed the weight for the Adames fight, and which I get because he's huge. He's 6'3". I don't know how he ever made 160, but now he's at 68. But like, he hasn't been there that long. Like, has he outgrown 68 already? Is he struggling again to make the weight? But you're right. He does seem to lack or lose focus in certain fights, depending on who he's, you know, who he's fighting, depending on, I don't know. But Andy Lee was visibly frustrated with what was going on. Andy Lee, the coach of Hamza Seraz. Yeah.
He's going to whip him into shape.
Yeah, which is a great connection, by the way. I think long, strong, good counterpuncher. I think Andy Lee is a really, really good coach, and he's doing excellent work with everybody he works with. He was very frustrated. At the end of the fight, you could see him in the background with his hands on his hips, like just looking dead forward, like, what the hell is this guy doing? After round six, he was like, all right, this guy's gone, one more round. And then it's like round nine, and then it's round 10, and then it's round 11, and there was no stepping on the gas whatsoever. And it wasn't like he was fighting a really solid guy who was super durable. I didn't see much from Zach and Uber at all. And Hamza just was fine with getting through it.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it whatsoever. And I thought Pacheco last week, people were poking holes at him because, you know, he passed up on fights over the years. So everyone's going to kind of dog him a little bit. He's had a longer development. But I thought Pacheco looked better last week against Aleem, obviously, than Seraz looked yesterday in that fight. And I didn't come out and just say this on Twitter, but I replied to someone and I was like, I don't think like Pacheco, I think Pacheco hangs with Seraz. Like, everyone's just penciling in Seraz as like the most dangerous guy at 168, and he runs through Pacheco, runs through some of these other guys. But no, like I don't think that at all. I think he's good. I think he has shown his upside is very high. But we've seen performances like on Saturday where you're like, all right, this guy isn't exactly who we think he is.
I was saying he's the most dangerous 68-pounder like yesterday, like right before this. And then I watched his fight and I'm like, this is a tough weight class. And it's hard to make that blanket statement off of these, you know, you fought. Who are these German guys that keep putting him in with? Where are they finding them? And the weight class is super deep.
Ridiculously weak run at 168.
Yeah, you know, so, but you got to live up to those statements. But Pacheco looked really good against a really tough guy. Aleem is tough, and he brings it, and he comes. He's not going to just go through the paces with you the way that Zackenhuber did. So, I think Pacheco's performance is way better against a tougher opposition, and it makes you question where in the pecking order is Hamza. Is he the top guy at 68? Is he the most dangerous guy at 68? I got to see him in with another dangerous fighter. I haven't yet at 68. You know, he fought Edgar Belanga, but that might have been an exposure type thing. It might have been a good night. Who knows? But since then, I don't know how you have, you're up here and then you take these fights that just really, it doesn't matter how you do. It's not helping your cause.
Yeah, 168 is an interesting division because no one is really the best at it. I can't pinpoint one guy where I'm like, he's the clear number one. You got Canelo, who is on the tail end of his career and will be fighting Mbili. Mbili has shown brilliance on offense, but is very limited in other aspects of his game. You got Iglesias, who is an IBF champion, who is generally untested, but he's very, very good. Lester Martinez, who is the dark horse of the entire division. Jaime Munguia, who probably looked the best of all these guys in recent memory when he beat Armando Resendez. And you have Jacob Bank, who won on Saturday, who could potentially fight Hamza. He got into the ring with him afterwards. He's a secondary WBO champion. And you have Pacheco. So, like, none of these guys, it's like, not, there's not one guy there where you're like, no, oh, this is the clear-cut number one. Like, maybe, like, I wouldn't even say Canelo. Like, I see Canelo as, like, having, like, one or two more fights before he's out of the picture. But like all the other guys, Like, no one has emerged as the clear-cut guy, which is probably good for a weight class.
Yeah, it is. And one thing I will say, though, it gives new life or extends the life of Canelo. Like, these guys start looking a little more mediocre, and it's like, well, you know, Canelo might be a shadow of himself, but even that shadow is pretty damn good. So,
he said he got 3 or 4 more left.
That's so crazy. When guys say that, that means that's like 2 more years. That's 2 years.
I don't believe it. I don't believe that, but he's saying.
I mean, Usyk said he had 3 more fights, and now he cut that right down.
We'll see how Canelo looks against him, Billy.
That's the thing. As an aging fighter, it's a fight by fight basis. So when guys say numbers like that, it's like, we'll see. I mean, we'll see, because you got to see how you feel. You don't get old in the gym; you get old in the ring on fight night. So, yeah, the weight class. Yeah. There's no standout guy for me either. I was saying like Hamza.
Maybe Munguia?
I was saying Shiraz. I mean, Munguia's got the most experience, and like you said, his last fight I think was the best Jaime Munguia I've ever seen. That was the best version, and he was fighting a very, very tough guy. Resendiz, I like. I think Resendiz is in that mix as well. I'd like to see Hamza Shiraz fight a Resendiz. I'd like to see him fight Pacheco. I'd like to see him go one of the big fights, but we're obviously not going to get that.
I think we got to. I think Shiraz has to fight someone, has to fight another champion or top 5 guy next.
I mean, he's going to fight Bank, which
yeah.
I know. I'm not excited to see Hamza Shiraz fight a guy from Denmark that, you know, his best win was beating William Skull School
for a mad shade at Denmark. What do they do to you? What do they do to you?
They're not known for creating.
I know.
Longstanding, you know, guys that are going to be exciting and you know, and he's just not known on the world stage.
So I think he's doing what we've seen in numerous years, where like Shiraz and Canelo, like Turkey wants that fight. So Shiraz is like taking on these types of opponents and not messing anything up until he gets that Canelo fight. Canelo beats him, Billy. He's the champion. Once again, WBC. Shiraz has the other belt.
I don't know, but treading water is not a good thing to do for a young, hungry fighter like Shiraz. Guys get stale. You can't do that. Shiraz would be better served to be in tough fight after tough fight after tough fight and going through the paces. So when he gets his moment, he wins. You can't baby a fighter. They feel it, and it affects their performance. I think Shiraz is the goods. You got to push him. Yeah. It's like getting a sports car. You got to drive that thing. You got to open it up. You can't go stop sign to stop sign with a sports car. You got to run it. And I think Hamza Shiraz is a sports car. I think he is a performance engine. He's got to be tested.
I 100% agree. Like, get this guy a big fight, and let's judge him from there, because you know, maybe it is tough to get up for these assignments, you know, like Saudi Arabia in front of not that many fans. You're minus 3,000 favorite. Let's get him a big fight, please. All right, let's get to what we saw Saturday night in Australia. Tim Zhu defeats Errol Spence, unanimous decision, 117, 111 twice, 118, 110. I didn't have it that wide. I had it 116, 112. For Spence, like, you could see he looked like a guy 3 years out of the ring and also just been through a lot in his career. Like, his balance was off. He was off balance with his shots. He was like pushing his punches. He wasn't taking the shots that well. Just didn't have enough engine, didn't have enough to keep a 3-minute round going. Obviously didn't have enough late, where I thought maybe if he won that 12th round, he might have been able to get a draw or get that fight closer. And for Zhu, I wasn't that super impressed with him either. Like, he just seems still gun shy, like you talked about on Friday's show or Thursday's show. But Zhu gets the win. Spence retires afterwards in the ring. We'll talk about that too. Zhu gets the win, but I didn't come away in overly impressed with Zhu. And for Spence, I kind of was what I expected from him.
Yeah, Spence. Listen, our pick was based on Spence nostalgia. And we said, like, listen, if we can get 70% of Spence, we got a real fight. That was not 70% of Spence. That was much degraded. That was less than 50. Yeah,
48.
Less than 50. I had people in my DMs being like, that was 30% Spence. I'm like, yeah, it was nowhere near 70. His legs looked like they were cast in iron. He could not move his legs with any kind. There was no bounce. He didn't bounce at any point during the fight. There was no in and out. Just heavy footed. Every time he threw the left hand, he threw it like with everything he had, fell over his front feet. And there were so many opportunities for Zhu to take advantage of a wounded animal in front of him, and he just didn't. And you could hear Jeff Fenech screaming at him in the corner. I forgot what round it was, but he was just like, just throw the right hand. And then he went out there one round and threw the right hand. And I think it was round four. I think it was in between round three and four. He was like, just throw the right hand. When you throw punches, you got him. And he goes out there and he starts throwing punches, and Spence looked like he was ready to go. He couldn't defend anything. He couldn't get away from anything. But Zhu just didn't throw enough. He didn't throw much at all. That wasn't CompuBox that did those numbers, was it?
Yeah.
It was? They were saying that Zhu was landing more punches like midway through. I was like, no way. Throwing more punches? The numbers seemed wild to me, because I thought, you know, Spence was working so hard those first four rounds, and that's where I gave him a couple rounds. But
well, the first four rounds, Spence was they were pretty close in total punches landed.
After the first four rounds, I was like, Spence is not seeing the end of this fight, because he was working so hard. He was burning.
Spence, 71 punches in round one, 95 in round two, 76 in round three, and then he hit 93 in round five. Then he fell off.
Yeah. So the first half of the fight, Spence was working way too hard, but he had to, because he had a bigger man in front of him. Have you ever seen Spence hold? He was holding in the fight. I've never seen him clinch.
That wasn't Errol Spence that we saw. No. But it wasn't like he didn't embarrass himself. He didn't.
No, he was valiant.
He didn't get stopped.
He didn't get stopped.
He did not want to end his career on the Crawford loss, and he decided, I'm going to give him one more go. We're talking about tune-ups for the first half of this podcast. This is a guy that should have taken a tune-up, but famously has never in his career. If Spence would have fought someone, someone like, you know, in the top 20, top 30, whatever, at 154, 158, 160, whatever, it would have benefited him a lot, I feel like. But
I don't think he would have talked this fight. I think if he would have fought somebody else, he wouldn't have been able to get up for it, and he might have performed really badly and even lost to someone not like nondescript. But I think also, he knew this was his last fight, no matter what.
Okay.
And I think
Was he trying to, like, that's what I questioned coming into this, Chris. Is he trying to win two or three fights to become a champion again? Or is it just one and done? I want to get this last, you know, thing out of my system. I want to not look like how I did in the Crawford fight.
It seemed like that. I was going to come on here and ask you why he did this fight, because he doesn't need the money. He doesn't. Legacy. The other day, like, his legacy is unaffected by this loss. You know, and even the win, if he wins or retires, his legacy wouldn't be affected. It would make Bud look better for sure. But and if he lost, which he did, it doesn't affect his legacy. He's a great fighter. His run at welterweight was historic, and he's going to go down and be remembered for that. I hope he's not one of those guys who gets remembered for just the end of his career, where you think, he lost to Tim Zhu, you know, didn't look good doing it, and he got destroyed by Bud. I think a lot more people remember that than this fight. But
I think what a lot of people are going to remember about him is the car accident.
That too.
Bro, he was at the highest of highs. Like, I was at that Porter fight in LA in the lead up for that. In 2019, PBC was having a really good year. Like, Wilder was on top. Spence was on top. Benavidez fought on the undercard of the Spence-Porter card, and he was just rising up and had a huge fan base behind him, still does. And Spence was riding high after that fight against Porter. Then the car accident happens, and that changed everything. Yes, he was able to come back and still have four or five really nice wins, but it's not the number one thing in the story on Spence's life. But like, that played a huge part in his career and like what it could have been, because he was. This conversation happens all the time, and it's going to happen for a long time. Like, what percentage was Spence at heading into the Crawford fight? Like, as far as I know, I thought he was fine, because he looked good against Ugas and he looked good against Danny Garcia. Then you hear stories that he wasn't sparring. You hear stories that it caught up to him. And then he has that performance against Crawford where I don't want to take anything away from Crawford, because that was an outstanding virtuoso performance.
But the wheels came off.
Wheels came off fast. And then he sits out for 3 years. And he has a valiant effort against Zhu. Like, he didn't get stopped, didn't get embarrassed. But, like, I think the story on Spence is going to be, unbelievable run as a welterweight. But that accident
What could have been? Let's not take away from the drinking.
That, too.
Let's not take away from that. He has been on podcasts recently, and he's been doing interviews, and he is you know, we've heard about the drinking, but he is actually talking about it from his own mouth now. That affects you. That takes years off your career. That hurts your brain, hurts your chin. You know, and apparently he was drinking a lot.
The crash was the culmination of a wild lifestyle.
Drinking and driving, and then he even said he was going out and drinking after that. So, you know, that didn't really deter him. He's a wild man. I mean, we're fighters. We're wild people. Like, that's part of it. I'm just happy to see him get through this fight, not get hurt. He kept talking about his faculties and his family. He's got his family to keep him grounded. He seems genuinely happy when his family's around, his kids are around, when he talks about his family. And he's ready to move on. He said it. This was one of the first things he said. I'm like, the next chapter of my life. So I'm happy to see any fighter retire healthy. He's got his money. He's got his family. He's got his farm. I mean, we've dealt with him. I dealt with him different ways, but I've dealt with him since we fought.
I didn't fight him.
Yeah, I did fight him. I've dealt with him since we fought. He's a good guy. And you've dealt with him a bunch of times, ran into him a couple times, only heard good things about him. So I'm happy to see Spence move on. And he had a stellar, stellar career. And yeah, there will be questions about what could have been, but God damn, how much did he accomplish in his height, even with the out-of-the-ring issues that occurred? I mean,
hell, coming back from that isn't being alive, number one, and being able to walk, number two, and then fighting, number three, after that accident is unbelievable. And I feel like he should have got way more credit than, but it's boxing and we don't get mainstream coverage from media. But yeah, like watching him fight at Coney Island on, after the Dream Team game and hearing about him in the Olympics and then him bursting onto the scene and just being like, wow, this guy's a beast. Like, 75, 80 punches around, knocking dudes out, fighting some of those big PBC welterweight fights when PBC was in their heyday on network television, and then kind of taking that mantle after Floyd, really, and after Ward retired, and kind of running with it and giving us some really good nights. So this is it for him. It's crazy to see, like, as another chapter closed, another fighter from your generation and your era that's hanging him up. I think Fury and Joshua will be next, and I tweeted this out beforehand. Like, it kind of reminded me, this weekend reminded me how the aging process, and it reminded me of how quick it's all over, especially in a grueling sport like boxing, because Joshua looks like he fell off a cliff. Fury, couldn't tell the difference between him and 46-year-old Walk. Then you got Spence, who did not look like Errol Spence in there, but still fought valiantly, and it just, towards the end of the fight, he only threw 14 punches in the 12th round.
He was just trying to get to the end.
He was done that last round. Like, I thought maybe, like I said, maybe if he was able to win that last round, the card, it wouldn't have mattered because the scorecards were super wide. But hats off to Errol Spence. Great guy. Like you said, leaving the sport with everything. That's awesome. For Zoo, I don't want to knock a guy while he's up. But, like, yeah, it's a huge win for him because this was do or die for him. Like, literally do or die, like, on the high level. Yeah. Now he can go and try to fight champions at 160, but I was not overly impressed with him at all. I thought he came off of a little delusional in the post-fight interview, but like you just said earlier, post-fight interviews, let's not judge fighters on these. Like, he got the win. That's what's most important. Like, not a lot of people were picking him, but he won the fight. But once again, I don't rate him that highly at 160. In fact, I would put Lara as the favorite over Tim Zoo.
Well, Lara's another one. Like the same, there's so many question marks. He's so inactive and you get old overnight. Like, he's 43, 44. Like, he's not, it's crazy that he's champion. Zoo should definitely stay at 60. 154 is a bunch of landmines that I just don't think he's on the level for those guys there. And 60, there are some spots. But no, I'm with you. I was not overly impressed. I think he could have stepped on the gas a lot more. I think there was a lot more he could have done. He did look explosive. He did look physically strong, but still gun shy to a degree. I remember Tim when he was coming up. I was a big Tim Zoo fan. I really liked what I saw from him. And, you know, he was a seek and destroy guy, and he was pressure, and he was on you. He kept the jab on you. He hit the body. He varied up his attack. I haven't seen that guy in years, because when he was operating like that, super solid. And I know Jeff Fennec wants him to be like that again, but yeah, he did not look like that last night. Hasn't looked like that for a while.
Well, the first Fundora fight, traumatic.
Yeah,
the blood.
No, you know, I don't think that. I don't think that was. I thought he fought his ass off. I thought he looked really good. I actually thought he won that fight.
But like from that point on is when things went downhill.
Yeah, traumatic was what happened afterwards when Mirtazaliyev destroyed him. Like he literally was in the he said something after that fight. He literally went in the back. He's like, "What happened?" That is traumatic. When you don't know what happened in a fight, that can end careers.
Yes, I give him credit for continuing on. He is still a relatively young guy. Yeah, the Bakram fight, just like that. Not only that, like changing teams and, you know, the questioning of should I have fought Fundora the second time? Should I have fought Fundora the first time? It was supposed to be Keith Thurman.
Yeah, yeah. He was a warrior for picking that. But also then the questioning of the team. Did they make the right decision in the corner? Like, should they have pushed for
many questions.
So many questions.
Like, the questions were, should I have fought Fundora on short notice? Should they have stopped the fight with all that blood? Then, should I have fought Bakram? Should I fight Fundora again? The second time, where he lost even more concisely than the first time, minus all the blood. And now he has a new team. Like, a lot has happened with Tim Zoo in the last, like, 4 years, but...
He's been under scrutiny for his last two wins too. He did not look exceptional in those nights either.
Right, and he's got the Australia thing going for him, and he's the son of a legend. So there is going to be scrutiny on him, and he understands that. And all in all, he seems to be like a good dude. Like I always say, but you fighters have to be delusional in order to compete in this sport. It's not no team around you. Like you. So after the fight, where he's like, I want a party. I want Lara. You know, best win of my career, you know, because, you know, it was a coming against a guy in Spence who had 1 foot out the door, literally. So, like, what are you supposed to say after a fight like that? Like, you had a long training camp. You've been through so much in the last 4 years. You won the fight. Are you supposed to go in there afterwards and be like, yeah, I won, but, you know, it's just 36-year-old Errol Spence. Like, it wasn't that good of a performance, guys. No, you're not going to say that.
No, even if you feel that, you don't say that.
You have to hype yourself up.
Yeah. No, sure.
And that's up for us to kind of sit here and be like, this guy's delusional. Like, I'm drinking my espresso this morning, and I'm watching the post-fight interview. And I'm like, what is it? This guy, he's not going to beat anyone. Yes, like, I'll say that. But, like, I know that Zoo's not going to say that. And he might be thinking it in the back of his mind, though.
Yeah, well, Guess what? We show up, and sometimes we beat those guys. And a lot of times we beat those guys. That when you're down and out and people don't believe in you, like, that's what fighters are about. That's the mindset you have to have. If he had a breakdown in the ring questioning his performance, that'd be worse.
I think Joshua would have said that maybe in the post-fight interview.
And that's the thing. We see guys do that. Remember Teofimo Lopez asking after... Do I still got it? Like, you know, on a hot mic. Like that...
That was performative, but I liked it.
It was. We're still talking about it. But I think... Was that against San Martin?
Sandor. Yeah.
Yeah, Sandor Martin. Yeah, that's... Yeah, man. I think, listen, Zoo did what he was supposed to do. He got out there. He's excited. He got the win. And then he moves on and looks for bigger fights.
Yeah, Fennec will probably bring him back down to life, right?
Well, I think Fennec is going to tell him we need to work more. We need to be busier. Because Fennec was chewing his ass out everywhere.
He really was.
Chewing his ass out everywhere. Yeah, he really And I get was. It. I get it. Because like whenever the guy let his hands go, Errol was floundering. Talk about the big fish. And he just didn't do enough, man. You had a guy that wasn't hitting hard enough, wasn't big enough, was tired, was slow, was old, and just allowing that fight to go as long as it did, it wasn't necessary. And Jeff saw that. Jeff knows what he's looking at. So he knows they got to go back to the drawing board. They got to back in the gym. They got to work. They got to get him to be busier. Got to take those risks.
Yeah, so 160, Lara... You know, he is with PBC. Like, I don't know how much this matters now with the whole new configuration of the zone. But, like, I think maybe, like, they're going to start with, like, promotions having their own cards, fighting each other. Speaking of which, this for PBC's first card on pay-per-view card on the zone, disaster. With Fulton missing weight.
Yeah. And Charlo just, visa issues didn't
Charlo
get there.
Visa issues. Fulton coming in, asking for 133 pounds after agreeing to 130 on fight week, then coming in at 139 on top of it, fight off. That guy is, you can't take him seriously anymore. That's back-to-back fight. We nailed it on the last episode. Like, not that it takes a freaking Nostradamus to see this. Like, he looked, Dick came in overweight in the Shockey fight. and then does the same thing in the in this one. I mean, well, that's really unfortunate because I like Fulton. Great dude. Yeah. But, like, come on, man. You miss weight twice. Like, fans kind of turn your back. Like, I think they turn your back on you more if you miss weight than if you do PEDs.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. PEDs can be forgotten. And missing weight, apparently.
You miss weight. It's like you insulted my entire family, and you're the worst person ever walking this earth. So if you do it twice, it's like you're wasting my time. That's what the fans say, not me.
Fulton strikes me as a guy who's checked out.
100%.
You know, he wins that title at 26 against Brandon Figueroa. He's a big underdog in that fight. Didn't look good in the fight before with Castro. Then he comes and beats. I mean, virtuoso performance against Figueroa. Looked awesome. You know, was very, very smart. Gets the win. Then he goes right up to 130 to fight Oshak. And then doesn't make weight. Like, you just moved up in weight. How did you not make any weight? And then we said it last show. All right, we're going back to the weight class you didn't make, but now we're across the world. And your visa issues. And you're getting there later than you're supposed to. Yeah, that was a recipe for disaster. But then coming at 139, not even that's dude. You're almost 10 pounds over.
It's egregious.
It's crazy.
It's disrespectful. And I was gonna pick Liam Wilson, and it messed up my FanDuel video. But I had to go and edit that, re-edit it. So that pissed me off even more from Stephen Fulton. But
I wish we would have bet him not making weight.
It's a different. A sports book, but Ken, are they paying these guys extra to go to Australia? Have you heard that through the grapevine and your little fighter fraternity? Because, like, why would Fulton take this fight in the first place? Like, why not? Like, all right, I'll fight in the States. I not have to go through all of the problems and all of the extra stress and added variables to fight in Australia.
Well, if you look at it, it was kind of PBC Misfits card. It was Spence, who really, hasn't been really here in 3.5 years. You don't know what to expect from Spence. Charlo, who used to train with Spence. We get on the same card. You know, Charlo, who has been super inactive and had his also issues outside of the ring. Fulton, who's had issues inside the ring recently. I think it was a way just to, listen, we got a PBC card over there. Errol's on the card. It's going to be probably Errol's last fight, his last chance for us to fight together. They need to put together a good card with Americans on it over there. Is there extra money? Probably. I got paid extra money to go to Macau. Like, the purses are usually bigger when you have to travel. It's not like it's
like
it's
how much like bigger though? It's not like PBC has like a huge war chest anymore.
It's just a percentage more. You know what it becomes? It becomes a negotiating point for the traveling side. Like, all right, I'll come, but like this has got to be a 65-45 split now.
Yeah, add some more dollars, a little more leverage. Yeah.
It's got to be a 65-35, you know, if it's a 50-50 fight, it's like, all right, well, I'm traveling, it's 60-40 now, or it's 55, you know, 45.
Because you think about it, like, he's had the problems with the weight in the Foster fight, didn't look that great. Right into a fight in Australia? Like, that's
no, kinda, it was in a hindsight, recipe for disaster.
In hindsight, yeah, like, you should still make weight. Everyone else made the weight, even though Spence kind of added the extra pounds on, but I have no problem with that, because Zoo said, I'm staying at 160.
And Spence still came in at 59.
Right, if Zoo was like, what the hell, like, I'm a 154-pounder, I'm fighting, no, Zoo, like, the whole week was like, I'm fighting at middleweight for the rest of my career, or higher.
It worked out for him.
Yeah, so I have no problem with Spence doing that, but, like, hindsight.
No, I don't think anyone did, even Zoo did, didn't care.
I saw a few tweets here and there, but you can't judge everything off Twitter. But everyone else made weight, and Stephen Fulton didn't. And that's not two fights in a row, and that's a trend now. I agree. I don't think his mind is in it anymore. Like, I see people saying, like, the Inoue broke him. Yeah, he lost that fight, but I think he made so much money in that fight. And some guys make a lot of money, and it changes them, and they lose a lot of the drive. And that's why I respect the Floyd Mayweathers, the Spences, the Canelo Alvarezes, who have made more money than we can even dream of. And they still have an insane drive, an insane desire. Like, when I saw Canelo last week at the Uncrowned studio, and I brought up him and Billy, this dude's face lit up. And he started shadow boxing while walking. Like, he's still excited. Canelo Alvarez, who has everything in the world. The guy has gas stations in Mexico. And he's still excited. So, I agree. I think he made a lot of money in that Inoue fight, Fulton. And he hasn't been the same since. Like, he lost in spectacular fashion, got knocked out, and made a lot of money, and then hasn't looked good. I thought he lost that bounce-back fight afterwards, and then bad performances. But, yeah, you got to make weight. Like, rule number one in boxing, besides protect yourself at all times, is make weight first.
Yeah, I mean, that's, we always say that's kind of the first fight before the fight, but that's a big no-no. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Fulton even tries anymore. I don't know if he comes back. You know, hopefully, you said he made a lot of money. Hopefully, he held on to it. You know, is dealing with it the right way.
That was a huge fight against Inoue. He probably made a couple million.
Yeah, I mean,
a couple million
go real fast, depending on how you manage your finances. So,
well, another thing Canelo said is when he looked at his bank account, and he thought he had $800,000. There was $200,000 in it. Well, in a blink of an eye.
It's better than being minus $200,000 because a lot of guys go through that too, you know. Yeah. So,
So that card ended up being a dud. Like, I would have loved to seen Charlo see what he's got left. I would have loved to seen Fulton versus Wilson. I thought that was going to be an awesome fight.
Yeah.
So they had
Wilson's fun. He whips that.
I mean, I was ready to pick him, man. I was ready to pick Wilson, and I picked a Yurko. I didn't pick him, but I said keep an eye on that, and he almost won that fight. Didn't see Zackenbacher. Oval Redenbacher, Zackenhuber.
Going the distance.
Yeah, didn't have that on my bingo card. But to wrap a bow, or what's the term? Wrap a bow? Tie a bow.
Tie a bow. Tie a bow
on, what are we talking about? Zoo. If they give him Lara, I kind of like Lara in that fight. You have Adames, who I think is at 168, like, not officially.
Yeah, what's the deal with him? Because I had some people asking me about
he's like Adames both.
And Shiraz rematch, which I'm down for.
At 68?
Yeah. I think it'll help them both.
I think Adames is smart.
I was talking Robert Garcia. Robert Garcia trained Carlos Adames for a couple fights, and he said he's a workhorse. He hits really hard.
He's a super beast. Strong.
But the weight has always been an issue. He's like, I think he'll be better at 68. He's like,
yeah,
I
think he's smart.
He's a big guy.
He's 32 years old, Adames. I think he's playing, like, he's going to look at what's there at 160, opportunities, and then if nothing's there, he'll go to 168, where there's a ton of opportunities. Yo-Yo Hernandez would destroy Zoo right now. Like, Lara's got that, still got the punch. Like, Lara is a wily veteran and can still land that left hand on Zoo. Especially if Zoo's not going to throw any punches. He's going to play right into Lara's hands.
Well, how many straight left hands did Spence land? A bunch.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And Spence was pushing his punches. Lara's still snapping.
At 43, still snapping, baby.
Well, I don't know, because we haven't seen him. Because, again, he could show up and we don't know. Like, same thing with Errol. Like, it was silly for us to pick Errol because, like, the guy hasn't fought in 3 years. I know how good he was once, but, like,
and you picked him to knock him out. Make the rounds.
How could you make a real determination? You know, it becomes like, I like Lara, so Lara's going to do it. But, like, I don't know when he's going to show up.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Like with Spence. Spence, we went nostalgic on Spence. Like, yeah, Spence of old, if he shows up, of course he's not going to show up. He's been out for 3 years, and he's been
nostalgic.
Damaged.
I didn't.
Yeah. You did too. You picked him to win.
I did pick him to win.
I just picked him, like, late round stoppage. Cause, like, you know, I got to be different than you, Dan. I can't just agree. If you go first, I can't just agree with you.
I agree with you not agreeing. Did you see Janibek? Crawford did an interview, and he said that if Janibek didn't pop for PEDs, he was going to fight him.
Yeah, well, I think we talked about that.
But, like, Crawford, confirmed it, which is probably the biggest fumble ever for a fighter, Janibek.
Yeah, well, Janibek really, you know, he did himself dirty.
Idiot. He's not even in the top 10 rankings for rank, and he's champion.
He was good, too, man. He was good.
Yeah, but he was enhanced. All right, that's our episode. Hope everyone had a great weekend. We'll see you at the end of the week when we get ready for Lamont Roach versus Zepeda.
Good fight, August 1st, right?
Yeah, TNT card.
Right around the corner.
TNT/DAZN card. I'm really looking forward to that one. Raymond Murataya is also on that card, and hopefully we'll have some news on Joshua and Fury and Devin Haney. Let's make that official so we can react to that. So a lot going on. I'm going to get in my car and drive to New Jersey to play golf with my college friends.
Nice. I'm going to get in my garage and have a grind out some cement. I'm going to level it out.
What the hell?
I got a house. I got things to do with the house.
Grind out cement.
Yeah, I got making a gym out of the garage, and
so you're gonna smooth the floor.
Got to smooth the floor. Got to smooth the walls. Got to get ready for the painting.
How do you know how to do that? Can I ask?
My father's a contractor.
Oh, so you learned.
Yeah. Yeah.
You learned how to do just about everything.
No, no. I definitely still have to go to YouTube and check things out, but I have.
Will YouTube be open on your phone next to you?
No, no. I do the studying beforehand. Measure twice, cut once, baby. But yeah, I mean, I got all the power tools you need to do pretty much everything. All my buddies borrow my stuff when they need it because I've got a real nice garage set up. But yeah, no, I'm pretty handy. As long as I'm home, I travel so much, I don't get to work in the house as much as I'd like to.
Yeah,
but if I'm home, I'm pretty handy.
Rare weekend home for Algeria. Yeah. All right, everyone, have a great week, and we will see you on Thursday when we break down some more fights. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Thales DMs. Goodbye.